Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're gonna go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Hit him. Go get that one, Henry. Prayer.
Size of that deer.
Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I'm going to try my best to get through this whole thing. I've been dealing with sickness or allergies or something for just weeks, it seems like. Constantly coughing. I feel like I can't breathe. All that good stuff, but I'm going to try to do this and get through it. Yes, there's going to be no guests this week, so you're going to listen to me blabber on. I have no idea how long this is going to be. I have a list of things I kind of want to get through. I've been kind of wanting to do an episode like this, just kind of like help me kind of like see where I'm at with everything, kind of like wrap up rabbit season, scouting, shed hunting, you know, future plans, what I got going on current event wise. And this week was just super busy, work and everything else going on. So I was like, you know what, this is a perfect time to do this episode. So yeah, that's, you're just gonna listen to me blabber on. If you want to skip it, wait till next week when I have a guest, or go listen back to some other ones, more to it. But we'll get going right into this. So partners, I'm going to get those out of the way. DH3, Asaba River Outfitters, there is a Deer Hunter Collective, April 5th. If you want to go or interested, go get some tickets. It's like a whole day event. There's going to be a lot of cool sales and people there, some discounts, you know, some sale pricing for people there that, you know, the general public does not get to have. So if you're looking for something to do, want to kind of like, you know, scratch the whitetail itch, check that out. You can go on Kevin Vissison's, you know, page, deerhunterpodcast.com, and or any of the social media, and you can find those tickets. There's going to be a panel of people there that are going to do some live podcasts, do some questions and answers on some stuff. It sounds like it's a pretty cool thing. It's my first time going. This is year 3 or 4 of that. I'm going. So it'll be kind of cool to see everyone there, and check that out. Vitalize Seed, don't forget that their website is different this year. So if you're wanting to continue on with Vitalize Seed or first time user of Vitalize Seed, check out their website. They changed it all up, and there's bundles now. That's like what I'm really intrigued with, and that's the route I'm going this year. I'm getting my spring bundles and then my fall bundles. So right now you want to get ordering your spring bundles. You can kind of, you know, they're in 1 acre increments. We kind of broke that down last week's intro, I believe. However, another thing I kind of forgot about, the new website does come with like interactions on there. So if you have any questions, you can go on there and, you know, shoot a message, and either Al, I believe it goes to Al or Jared or both. I'm not sure how that works, but you can actually, you know, reach out to those guys and talk to someone who's, you know, knows the ins and outs of this stuff. That is, it's not just pushed off to someone that maybe doesn't have as much knowledge, or, you know, they're just not at that point. Maybe in the future they'll be able to build a little bit bigger team, but right now it's a small business. And they're doing that. And I think it's really cool that if you have a specific question about a specific product, you can go right to the guys that designed it and, you know the ins and outs of that. So check out their website. If you want to do your spring plots, you know, look into that and do that. And I just want to touch on the spring plots. Like, that's something I never really, you know, really wanted to do or had a desire to do until I started listening about Vitalize Seed. And the ability to have a 1-2 punch to help with the soil too, right? And help with weeds and help with all that stuff. Built, you're doing more than one thing, right? You're having food more often for the wildlife. You're making the soil better than where, you know, when you started. You're trying to just make an organic material. I don't want to have to spray all the time. I don't want to like constantly put fertilizer down. I want it to be, you know, as simple as can be. Also, and because I think dirty plots, dirty cornfields, dirty bean fields, when there's a lot of variety, just seems to kind of like draw a deer a little different, maybe a little higher age structure of a deer. I mean, dude, if I, every time I walk into a place and there's like grasses that are, you know, higher than my head, and there's just a bunch of mumble jumble and it's just dirty looking, that's usually when I kind of like to hunt around those areas. And I've had really good success in the past, you know, almost a decade doing that. The thought process of me being able to like plant a Nitro Boost and have all this stuff growing, like a huge variety, right? Like, I'm for variety, and I don't like hunting properties that are all one thing. I don't like, you know, scouting around. I don't like rabbit hunting properties that are all one thing. I don't like deer hunting properties that are all one thing. I don't like walking around, because if it looks the same, it's like cool. So having a plot that was ahead of variety. Nitro Boost has a big variety, and so does Carbon Load. And then last year what I did is I planted a bigger plot, because it's a brand new area, all Nitro Boost, and then I kind of carved out a fall plot of Carbon Load in there. And that worked really well. Like, it gave the deer some security. I was building some soil. I didn't, you know, cost was down because there was Nitro Boost that was the majority of the plot, and then had like a little pocket of Carbon Load, and, you know, had really good daylight deer movement through that. So that's the kind of thing I like. I love giving structure to them. And like, I'm new to this, and just the thought of like, hey, I've targeted deer in areas like this, I've found stuff, why do I like that? And that is, you know, usually what happens. I mean, the really, you know, Mr. Krabs, I missed him not last year, but the year before. He blew up into, you know, the giant he became this year. Still a really, really big deer. He was literally, I had tucked a food plot, a Carbon Load plot, right up against, you know, dirty crap. Like, there was weeds, there was brambles and briars, and there was like trees you couldn't get a tree stand in. And he loved using that transition, you know, and boom, had an awesome plot right in his face that was full of a wide variety, right? He was using it all throughout the fall. And I noticed the same kind of thing with it. When you have a nitro boost plot, the deer in it, and then when you kind of transition over to carbon load, they just kind of stay there, and I really like that. Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. Hey, turkey mounts, that's the thing to think about. Right now, where turkey season is staring us right in the face, it's going to be coming here really quick. Before long, you're going to be hearing turkeys, thundering in the morning and the evenings. You're going to see them in the fields all puffed up. I already have been seeing a little bit of that in the really nice warm days, but it's here. So if you end up finding yourself with your first tom, or a kid shoots a first turkey, and you want to preserve that memory in a way other than just a picture, go give Wildlife Legends Taxidermy a follow. They do lots of turkeys. I got two turkeys done by Matt, and I love them. I got a bearded hen, and I got my full strut tom, and the bearded hen's kind of sitting on a branch. Pretty cool thing. Just every time I look at that, it's like, man, I remember that. It brings me right back to that morning. This is dumb 19-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid that I'm going to go turkey hunting, and took a little morning off from work and sat by a big oak tree because I had roosted some toms in the night before, and got set up, waited a little bit, cluck, 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 and it was just like everything was echoing, and they came booking across the field, and I picked the biggest one and shot it, and it was pretty cool to do that, experience that. That was awesome. It was in May, too. I did the little later hunt. I don't even know if it was opening day. I just was like, I'm going this morning, and I hunted. It's pretty cool. And then the bearded hen, I shot that with my bow, which was pretty cool. That was a fall turkey. Last year I tried to get a fall turkey tag, and they're all sold out. But usually I always have tried to carry a fall turkey tag in my pocket. And I ended up shooting that one with a bow, and was like, holy cow, it's a bearded hen, zapped her. So it was really cool to have that, those memories. All right, guys. I'm going to take a little sip here of my drink. Make sure I don't try to get a coughing fit or anything, but I kind of want to go through this list, and, we're approaching 100th episode. I do not believe this is my 100th episode. I think it's like 99 or 98. However, I have a couple ideas for episode 100, but I don't think it's going to be anything spectacular. I just this time of year is super busy for me. So I know a lot of guys like to do cool things and, around their 100th or 200th episode, and it's like, maybe I dropped the ball a little bit, but I'm relatively new to this, right? I don't push too hard on, partners. I don't do that stuff. I kind of just be me, and if something comes up, we'll roll with it. But I do want to do something here throughout the summer to kind of bounce around some ideas with myself, and reach out to some people to try to do maybe something. But it will not be for episode 100, so it's going to have to be, it'll be for episode 100, but it'll be a different episode. But anyways, I'm just going to break through some of these things. I'm going to do rabbit season. So we just got, I think I might go one more time here before March 31st. Other than that, this weekend was, my last hunt with the boys, right? The group of us that go, we've been going for quite a few years. I think a memory just popped up from 5 years ago where me and Matt went, and I've been going with Tyler for I don't even know how many years. So, we've got a pretty good core group of guys that have, rabbit hunted pretty consistently over the years. So we all got to go. I mean, Tony, we were short one, Tony. But other than that, it was a really good day. And, man, the dogs, it was so nice to have good conditions, right? It was cold in the morning, but it wasn't like a heavy frost. There was sun out, there was no ice, and the rabbits were running, right? And awesome loops, dogs did great. We had my two dogs and Tyler's dog, and they were doing we got done, and I was like, man, I'm really, glad we all got to experience, a really awesome day of running. We've had some good days, but it would be, kind of hot or cold. Maybe the dogs, the rabbit they were on really good, would do a weird loop and we'd get shot right away, or it would go right to a hole, or then it would get to a spot where it was just a solid layer of ice and the scenting conditions were kind of bad. And, we would, maybe we would mess up as the hunters because we were being a little impatient or something. But yesterday was perfect. The rabbits looped, rabbits would get by one time and we'd maybe see the rabbit, and then you wait in position. The dog just kept going. They were decent, sometimes the rabbits are really far in front of the dog, especially if there's a lot of snow and crusty snow. The dogs will break through the snow, but the rabbit can stay on top. And that's what we really were dealing with this year. But it was a little more even this time because the dogs had a good speed. They were really able to scent behind them, and it was a lot of fun. We didn't even shoot the most rabbits that we've shot this year, but we had a good time. And I really enjoyed that. And breaking into that, I think I think the reason why I enjoyed it so much is just because you could just hear the dogs. Like, you could tell they were excited. They were hammering. You were kind of like looking and like, okay, they're bringing the rabbit here. And you're just, you know, there's a lot of excitement. Then when someone shot the rabbit, it just felt a little different because, like, man, those dogs really worked that rabbit and it felt really good. And you can't see as well because there's no snow. And, you know, the rabbits are running pretty fast because they're, you know, on dry ground and, you know, making some good shots. And it was pumped. It was a little bit more excitement in the air, I guess, every time someone did pull a trigger and connected. Was pretty cool. And, you know, hey, I shot two more rabbits with the pistol, so I was pretty excited about that. I mag dumped with the .22 pistol on one, you know, forgot to turn my red dot on. However, it was on, and I just was a little impatient, apparently. And I, you know, did a mag dump, which was kind of fun. Always, you know, good laughs when you're doing that. That's with the .22 pistol. And then that same rabbit, actually, the dogs continued on and was able to make a move. And yeah, pulled out the 410 pistol and I got that rabbit. So I was excited about that and then ended up shooting another one shortly after. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, that goal of trying to shoot a rabbit with the 410 pistol. I did that a couple weeks ago. And then, you know, I've been doing a lot of filming during rabbit season, just trying to learn cameras and learn how to do that a little bit. Just trying to get better. You know, that's kind of shout out Rome here a second, because that's what, you know, trying to increase my level of, I guess, awareness or education on how to film. And I think it's something that the only way I can get better at, I can watch a bunch of videos, I can, you know, understand what each button does, but I just got to do it and see how it turns out. So I've been carrying a camera around a lot and I got some really bad footage. Mostly I did, you know, get a little snippet of some filming myself and shooting a, you know, kind of funny, holding the camera one hand, you know, taking a shot of the 410 pistol in the other, and I connected. But then, you know, yesterday I did a lot of that, and then it got to the point where it was like batteries are all dead, and I was like, I'm gonna try to shoot some stuff now, and I got to do that. And that was a lot of fun doing that too. But then, of course, when you get back, it's like, man, I wish I would have brought an extra battery, because it'd have been kind of cool to see that. But yeah, that's going. So that's Rome. I don't know how much of the footage from rabbit season is gonna end up, you know, being over there. We only have social media pages started right now, Facebook and Instagram. The YouTube page will get, you know, fired up here once we got some videos, I think. But yeah, go give that a follow and check that out. You know, there's a group of us that are doing this. We actually have a podcast that might be coming out this week as well. I think we're going to share it across our platforms, so you can look out, you know, look for that. We kind of break down who we are, a few of us that are in that group, what the goals are, why we're doing it, those kind of things. So yeah, rabbit season overall has been a lot of fun. The least amount of rabbits I've shot in, I think, since I started doing it again. Just for some of those reasons, you know, trying to get a pistol kill, they got to be close, trying to film a lot more. But I think my level of enjoyment and seeing the dogs work and having fun was the same, if not more. So that's been a lot of fun. And then, you know, bouncing off with rabbit hunting, I've talked about this before. Like, for me, I primarily am a private land hunter, right? I have no problem hunting public land. I have no problem going out of state and doing it. I mean, primarily, if you take all these out-of-state trips I've gone on, the majority of the time, overwhelmingly, has been me walking around on public land. But Michigan, you know, I just have had the ability or the desire for a long time to just knock on door permission stuff. And that kind of started with rabbit hunting. Like, that's how I was brought into it, was my uncle, he had knock on door permission property. Then Tyler and his dad, they had a bunch. The Hills had a bunch of stuff. So I kind of just like morphed into that, like, hey, if you want a rabbit hunt, you can knock on a door and get permission. So that really fit really well with my ability to do that, because I was like, I already do that with whitetails. So I just kind of want to break down, like, we got two new permission pieces this weekend. So I just kind of want to bring some light on to, it's a constant thought almost. Like, you're constantly thinking, you've got to do, like, sometimes properties just fall into your lap, right? Like, sometimes it's like, hey, like, that happened yesterday. Just randomly met a guy, a neighbor, small talked with him while we're out there running the dogs. And he's like, yeah, you can hunt right here. You know, and then you get maybe some more access and some property around. But then there's another property, which is more of a long-term play, right? This, like, some of these properties, you know, you drive by for a year or two, constantly thinking, and it's like, you try to put the odds in your favor. And, like, I don't have any, like, big time secrets here on, like, asking permission, but there are certain properties that, to me, it's like my odds are much higher getting permission. And that could be this property. I probably can't deer hunt it, but there's a really good chance I can rabbit hunt it. And if you rabbit hunt it, gets my foot in the door, I can understand if others are hunting it, right? You find tree stands, you find hunter sign, you find box blinds, you do all that stuff. It's like, okay, these are pretty serious, you know, deer hunters. But also not only for that property you're hunting when you're rabbit hunting, but also maybe the neighboring property. So essentially, like what we'll do is we will, you know, if any of us get permission on a piece, I will rabbit hunt it for a year or two, kind of see what's going on. Do I find trail cameras, all that stuff? And is there is good deer sign there? The majority of the time, the properties that we rabbit hunt are really good. There already are deer hunters there, so it's a no-go, right? Like, if hunters are already hunting it, I don't ask to hunt it. Like, I don't need to be that guy that's like, maybe the farmers or the property owner's a guy that lets everyone hunt. But, like, that would be the last thing I want to do is, like, knowing someone, like, if someone knew I was hunting a property and then they went and got permission and they just, like, joined me, it's like, I'd be like, what's up, dude? Because a lot of these properties aren't very big. So I don't ever want to do that to anyone. And hopefully, I've gotten permission not realizing other people have permission there, and I've just stopped hunting those areas. So, like, that's just kind of, like, what I do personally. If I wanted to kind of deal with people and do that kind of thing, I'll just go, you know, that's, like, what I do. Public land, the mindset is, I'm going to find people, I'm going to have people walking on me, I'm going to, you know, have those kind of things. But when I hunt private, I kind of want to have, like, the little pocket to myself. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Anyways, the majority of the time, that's what happens. Don't get permission. But however, we had this spot that hunted quite a few times. There's always a lot of deer sign in this spot. But it was always one of those things like maybe I probably could get permission to, you know, bow hunt it or gun hunt it. But how am I going to hunt it? Like, it never made any sense. I've been like racking my brain for years on how in the world I would ever effectively hunt this spot. And then finally, the thought was like, oh man, like the neighboring property though, that looks pretty good and I'm intrigued over there. And so I had like asked permission to rabbit hunt that property a few years ago and got told no. So like one thing I always do is I'm not afraid to ask again. You know, a lot could happen. You could get a different person that answers the door. Maybe they're in a different mindset, or maybe they're home, right? So this year we hunted this spot, and so like it's kind of hard when you have dogs, right? They don't know property lines. So a lot of times, if certain properties, if you don't like have a guy blocking a rabbit, or if you maybe are on top of your dogs, like they cover some ground pretty quick, especially some thick stuff. So what happened this year was our dogs end up looping a rabbit pretty far into this guy's property. And it's like, oh, you know, you stand over there and you like call and trying to get them off a rabbit, which is really hard to do. But we always try our best to do that, right? And then if it continues, one of us will walk over there. A lot of times we'll leave a gun if it's close to houses. We just don't want to be weird or anything like that. And I was like, fine. I was like, I'm asking again. Like that was just like, we need to ask again. It's kind of difficult to hunt this spot without our dogs doing that. So yeah, I went and asked and got permission. So it was awesome. Like, yes, you know, another piece of the puzzle. And then we finally hunted that spot, and it wasn't eye-opening or, you know, like, holy cow, this property is amazing for anything. It was just more acreage, right? That was kind of thought. Like, it had cover that butted up to what we already had permission. Rabbits and dogs don't know fence lines. It's like, hey, this little pocket right here, cool. If we loop a rabbit through there, we don't have to worry about chasing our dogs. They can, you know, loop them back in. So it was pretty cool. But we actually walked a little bit more of that, trying to kick up another rabbit or two. And the gears were turning, right? The gears were going, and the whitetail mode was happening. And yes, I think I found a really good potential spot to hunt, to be able to hunt those deer that are in that pocket. And that was literally just the only change was just gaining a little bit more permission, right? Just one little piece. I know there's deer in the area. Do I know there's a shooter deer? Don't know. Don't care, because I'm just going to learn a new spot. And another cool thing is found a really nice shed, right? Like found an old shed. It was my farthest spot too, right? Like I was probably 100 yards away and I was like, man, I think that's a shed way over there. And like, you know, go look at Tyler. Tyler, you think that's a shed? you know, like, it's not a stick. It's not a corn stalk because there's no trees around. It was kind of right up against the waterway. I was like, I think that's a shed. And sure enough, walk over there, and it was a really nice one, right? It was a four-point side, all chewed up, and you can tell it had been out there for a while, maybe three-year-old shed, but still really cool, right? And that was pretty exciting. I was like, hey, found a shed. Like, it's been a pretty bad shed season. I haven't found – all I've been finding is dead deer. So found that shed, and then, you know, as you're looking, it's like, okay, what's the wind direction? How can I hunt this? I just instantly went into, you know, whitetail mode and found like this little spot, this little group of trees that's like, oh yeah, you could sneak in off here, you know, use some cover and set up. So like, to me, it's already a win, right? Like, obviously got to go get some intel, and that'll be with a camera and a mock scrape. And then, but I already like took advantage of the opportunity. I'm already walking this property with, you know, chasing some rabbits. I can switch to whitetail mode. And that's what I've done for many years. Like, that's some of my scouting. And I'm pretty excited about that. Like, I think it's going to work. I think it could be potentially a really good early season spot. Because, like, we get those south-ish winds. If it's warmer, it's by water. It's got egg fields around. And I know there's some really good bedding in proximity. So it kind of checks the box for a lot of things for me. Secluded, good access, and I can hunt it early season. Because I feel like that's like if you can hunt a spot early season, you have a good odds. If you like, I really like targeting, like, you know, deer I want to shoot in the early season if I can find them. Like, that's the rut, and the pre-rut is a little more chaotic, a little more like you got to be lucky. I feel like you can definitely like get a pattern on a deer. Like, I've done that, but some of those spots, it's like you don't know. You just got to have a bunch of them and just like throw a dart at the wall and be like, I'm going here. And get lucky. But like, having a good early season plan, I like, because the time change hasn't happened yet. I can hunt usually a couple more days a week because of that. And evenings are good in the early season, which is when I have the most availability. So a lot of boxes check for me for early season. So I'm really excited about that spot. And that's going to kind of like roll into my other spot. So I feel like I got two good spots already going into 2025, brand new spots. That spot I just talked about. And then the second spot, which is, it's kind of similar, right? It checks the boxes. I feel like I can get good access. I feel like it could be hunted on multiple winds. And I think it's a really good spot for a mock scrape. And the reason why I really like spots like that is just so I can get inventory. Like, I love being able to set a camera on a scrape or a mock scrape and just let it do its thing and learn what I can learn. And then throw some hunts at it, right? Like, if it's like, oh, I don't really know where to go. I got this wind. I'm going to go give that a shot. And maybe have some camera intel to kind of go off of that, or you don't have any intel, you're just going there blind, and you go sit there, and then you see stuff with your own two eyes, like, okay, I'm on to something here. And then, you know, kind of build on that. So the second spot is completely different, right? It's more like swampy, it's more less ag around. It's not going to be that like stereotypical, like, you know, predictable deer movement, because like, all right, cover's here, food's here, like I can kind of 1-2 that. This is going to be a little different than that, but also there's some terrain mixed in with it. So I really like using terrain, using a mock scrape, all this stuff to like kind of put the pieces of the puzzle. And I scouted it, right? Like, so I did a lot of walking around this area, and there was tracks, there was buck sign, there was potential bedding that made sense, you know, and it's like, hey, that's enough stuff to get me interested and have me, you know, throw some sits at it. So whitetail, new spots, those are two spots I really like. And then I've talked about this too in the past, like, I don't do much whitetail scouting until April. Like, it's if there's some days maybe in, you know, I might go a couple times, handful of times in between, like, you know, now and, you know, when deer season ends. And that's usually like grabbing trail cameras, you know, checking spots out, doing maybe a shed hunt or two with Henry. But when I like really get into like, okay, I'm going to figure some stuff out, that's usually April. Like, the month of April is when I try to do that. And that's just because I love rabbit hunting. And don't get me wrong, like, I scout when I rabbit hunt, but that depends on if I'm hunting public or if I'm hunting a piece that I do have bolt permission for, you know, rabbits or deer. But the primary amount of my deer scouting is the month of April. And I don't know if it really, like, if you talk to a lot of different guys that are, you know, whitetail crazy, they do a lot of scouting, right? If they're big woods hunters, or even if they're public, private guys, doesn't matter. They do a ton of scouting. So every year I kind of get like that little bit of anxiety, like, oh, I'm behind. I haven't done much whitetail stuff. But I it what outweighs that is the enjoyment I get out of rabbit hunting and being with my buddies. Like rabbit hunting is a group effort, you know, 95% of the time. Like, don't get me wrong, I went once this year by myself, but typically you always go with a buddy and have fun, and you know, you hang out a little bit before, you hang out a little bit after, and you just get to have a good time. So like the amount of enjoyment I get out of small game hunting with them far outweighs my desire or anxiety to do whitetail stuff. So I like it's, and it's kind of a nice break, right? It's almost like a hard break. Like, hey, I went hard for the year. Boom, that's done. Now I'm going to rabbits, and dogs are the focus. So April is my time, and sometimes I can get a little bit of stuff, you know, handled in May too before it gets super greened up. So I feel like for me, that's plenty of time. Like, I can sprinkle in some stuff throughout there, and that's coming up. So I got some other spots, you know, kind of like thought of. And then also, like, this is when I kind of like rabbit season's done. Now, like, the food plot strategy comes into play. What am I going to do? When am I going to do it? What do I need to, you know, tweak something from last year, looking at the maps, doing that kind of stuff. So that's that part. And then also, like, a new thing into there is some habitat stuff. So I think I've talked about this a little bit. I haven't done much habitat at all on some properties, but we have some stuff going on a family property. Which is, that's kind of like a new and exciting thing. No idea how it's going to work. We are just going hard in the paint with it. We're going to try our best to do some things. You know, my dad's involved with that, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, I'm really looking forward to trying to manipulate a property with more than just a food plot. And I've always been intrigued by that. I've always liked it. I've always appreciated all the guys that, you know, dedicate a bunch of time and effort and sweat equity into a property. And you can, like, see the fruit of that. Like, I love seeing guys talk about how, like, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, the biggest deer we've ever had or ever shot on this property was this big. And now we just blew that out of the water and we can attribute that to because of X, Y, and Z. Maybe that's trigger control, habitat improvements, food plot strategy, all those things. Like, I really get a kick out of that because, like, that's the goal, right? Like, you're trying to get better. And I love putting effort towards something and seeing a return on that. So there will be some more habitat stuff probably this year than in years past, just because we're going to be involved with it. And maybe I can have some, like, better conversations because I'm actually, like, you know, using a chainsaw to do stuff, or I'm creating access in a way I've never created access before, or I'm planting stuff that I've never planted before. So I'm kind of looking forward to that here in this summer, and hopefully the stars align, schedules align up where we can do some more of that. So that's pretty exciting, right? And that's kind of like the whitetail stuff. I don't have too much. I guess I can kind of break down a little bit on, like, potential targets for this fall. Nothing like last year, right? Like, had the, you know, Mr. Krabs giant, 206-inch and or 205-inch from change is what he ended up netting. Just a monster, right? Kent County record potentially, or maybe he is, I'm not sure. But, like, a deer like that, like, I don't foresee that happening this year. And, you know, even last year I didn't anticipate that deer making a jump like that. But I do have a handful of deer I'm really intrigued with and kind of curious about. One is B8, the Broken Eight. Seen him a bunch, had him in the bull range a bunch of times. If he wasn't all busted up, you know, arrows would have been sent after him. 4.5-year-old deer. I'm really intrigued to see what goes on with him. I seen him in January when I hunted later in the year. So I'm optimistic that he made it. And that's kind of like him. And then there's one other potential buck, which I called Caveman, I believe. Caveman's kind of an interesting deer. I seen him a few times. He wasn't old enough, I didn't think, to shoot. He was a really interesting deer because his rack did not fit his body size. So when you'd see him in person, you're like, whoa, that's a huge body deer. Then you see the headgear and you're like, something's not quite lining up there. So he never really got, I think he might've been in bow range one time. Kind of intrigued by him. And there was another younger 8-point that I, you know, had walked by a couple times in the wintertime. It was really cool, actually. I was sitting on the micro food plot. There was a little bit of a waterway close by. It was 50 yards. And this buck kind of came off this this kind of like little terrain feature in the field, dropped down in, came through, stopped, and got a drink out of this water, which is really cool. I mean, snow is everywhere, right? You'd think everything's frozen, but the water was moving, or there was a little bit of ice. He was a little breakthrough, I'm not sure. And he just stopped and, you know, perfectly broadside, just took a drink the water. I was like, oh, yeah, they are thirsty still in the wintertime. You know, something I've never really thought about, like water when everything's frozen for deer. But then he ended up going by. So he's a deer I'm intrigued with. I think he was 2.5, or he's a giant year and a half old deer. So I'm really intrigued to see what he does, just because he was one of those deers like, you're pretty high scoring for how young you are. So I'm intrigued with that deer. I'm intrigued with Caveman and then B8. My thought process is those might be the only three deer, because a lot of other deer went MIA, and I found out about one of them died from EHD in October. And then when I went shed hunting, I found so many dead EHD deer and bucks, and a couple other ones had their heads cut off. And if you, like, when you walk through the woods and you find 10 dead deer and you see their skeletal structure and you can see that stuff, and it's like, and the one deer was a 2-year-old 8-point, and then you, in 10 minutes, you find another deer with his head cut off and you can see the size of the body, it's like, oh yeah, he probably was that deer that I had seen, or he was probably that 3-year-old that, you know. And there was one of them, there was a 4-year-old that did disappear last year too, and they all kind of disappeared at the same time. So I think those might be the only three. So, which is great. Like, I remember years where I couldn't even find a 2-year-old to shoot. So I'm super excited to at least be in play with some deer. Hopefully that comes together. And then I have another deer called Baby Giant. He is probably, if I were to like say what deer do I really like, am I the most excited to see, would be Baby Giant. He is a deer that I, you know, seen a couple times last year. Don't have much history with him. I think I know what deer it is, but I'm not 100% sure, because sometimes they make really big jumps. It's hard to tell. But he was a deer where on the ground, I had a work emergency, so I got out of the tree early. On the way to the truck, I kind of did a weird little loop to try to like be sneaky or see if I could catch a deer. And sure enough, I see tines, right? So it was, holy cow, let's go. And took off running with my bow and my antlers, and kind of cut this deer off in a way. I was a little behind him, which is fine. I ended up doing the whole ground calling sequence, you know, raked some brush, did some mouth grunts, did a little mini snort wheeze, and man, he came in. It was so cool. All pissed off, and could have maybe snuck an arrow at 22 yards, but saw what deer was, like, nope, not doing that. So yeah, BG, Baby Giant. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he could become. So I'm excited, right? I'm excited for Michigan for this year. There's some really solid plays and some deer, hopefully. I mean, a lot can happen. We could have another year of EHD. Car deer accidents are a thing. Deer can move on, but it's nice to be at this point in the year and be like, okay, I'm just kind of like waiting. I'm not in panic. Like, I'm not like panic. I got to find something. So that's really good. But that, that's kind of it. Going in 25, those are kind of the deer. Then out of state wise, who knows what this year is going to bring. I'm really hoping to be able to go to Kansas again and do, you know, that whole rodeo. That was a lot of fun. I really enjoy that opportunity to do that last year, because went with a group of buddies, lots of opportunity, and it was just kind of fun to go do that. So it might be the year where I finally go to the same public. I might actually step foot on a public piece of land that I did the year prior. I've always been a guy that's like, I'll go here. And now I feel like I'm kind of at the point where it's time to like start going back to some of these areas. And if we draw Kansas, that's where I'll go. I'll probably go in the same kind of general area. Maybe I'll find new stuff. Maybe I'll find what I like on familiar property. We'll see. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, you know, whitetail focused right now. And then current event wise, like upcoming, my hog hunt in Oklahoma, that is going to be, I'm leaving this end of March to go do that again. So the second year I've been able to go, my buddy John Hudspeth and Nick Otto from Huntivore and Andrew and some of these guys, Mitch, I was on his podcast. He's from Pennsylvania. I think it's Pennsylvania Outdoorsman, I think is the name of his podcast. He's a part of the Empire as well. So going to go do that again. What a riot that was last year. You know, found some really good success, shot quite a few, hogs, and we're doing that again. So that's kind of my like thing I'm like focused on right now. Like, I'm already like, oh, do I need to start packing? But we'll get there. I'll get everything. I mean, I'm leaving in less than a week. So I wanted to kind of quick break down that a little bit for anyone. I know a lot of guys, especially here in Michigan, have probably been like, oh my gosh, I would love to go do that, you know, the helicopter rides, shooting hogs out of that, you know, those kind of things. And this is a pretty cool opportunity, right? Like, I got in with they're my brothers, they're like, we're like a group of buddies now, and it's more so like, this isn't an outfitted thing, This isn't a pay to play thing. This is just like a group of people going somewhere and having fun. And also trying to, like, you know, knock down some hogs in the process. And I don't think you can eradicate them, but the goal is to do that. I mean, there's a lot of pigs. They procreate very, very fast. I mean, it's a tough thing to do, right? But I, going there last year, it kind of was like, oh, I get it. Like, I get why you guys as ranchers or as farmers or anyone else do not like these things, because they are very destructive in ways that didn't really make sense to me until I saw the terrain, saw the landscape. You know, you think of farm fields here in Michigan, it's flat, it's, you know, solid dirt. Farmers got big discs they can go through, and they, you know, they mass produce, you know, all this acreage of corn and beans and alfalfa. Well, you get out into a place like Oklahoma, it's not flat. It's rolling hills. There's like creeks. The ground is completely different, kind of like a clay-like. They have, you know, long periods of time with no rain. So when these hogs go through and they root around and they do what they're like made to do, right? They're a root animal. They create so much damage to these fields. And then you follow that up by a lot of rain, washouts happen, a difficult area to get a tractor implement into to, you know, fix your pasture for your cattle. Cause a lot of those guys run cattle. It just is like a pain. Like, it's like a woodchuck on steroids, right? Like, I mean, woodchucks can create holes and break equipment and do those things, but it's like one woodchuck is, I don't know, not even close to the size of like some of the pigs I shot last year. So they're every day doing that, and they're spread out. Like, a woodchuck kind of keeps his area by his hole, kind of a pocket. These pigs roam all over. So it was fun to see that and understand it. And also, they taste good, man. Brought some meat back from last time. And was able to, you know, eat some of that at a wild game dinner. Uncle helped out with that, and he, you know, cooked that up with them guys over there. Had some of that. It was delicious. So I'm going down there with the thought process. I'm going to have fun with the buddies. I'm going to shoot some pigs, hopefully, and bring some of that meat back, because it was really good. And it might be a location-wise, but, like, those hogs are healthy. Like, there's a good fat content on them. They were good size. Tasted really good. So to me, it's like, it checks the boxes in a good way. Have fun with your buddies, shoot some guns, and you can eat what you shoot. Like, I'm down for that. So I'm looking forward to that. And, like, kind of our meat prep or our meat, you know, acquisition is a little difficult. Like, right, like, me and Nick, we ride together and do those kind of things. And he's like hunter, right? So, like, he's wild game focused with, like, you know, how to take care of the meat, what you can eat out of it, all these awesome dishes. He has some awesome guests on his podcast. I'm just like more of like, I'm just a dude that likes to shoot deer and I like eating backstraps. And I'm very basic with like my, you know, dishes and that kind of stuff. But it's like, how are we going to get these back? Right. Cause there's a couple things that go against you, right? It's not cold. Like, it's going to be 80 degrees when we're there. We don't have access to a walk-in cooler. And we're going to be there for a couple days, and it's a decent like haul out there. Like, this isn't a 5-hour trip. This is a 16-hour drive. So last year it worked pretty well. Like, we were, when we shot the hogs and the ones we kept, we, you know, cause we couldn't keep them all. Which was really good. We shot more than we had coolers for. But it worked out really well. Like, we were able to do that. And I think last year, understanding that, like, hey, we were able to accomplish this and it worked. We're like, okay, let's do some minor tweaks here. We have some grand plans of maybe having a freezer or doing all this stuff. And it's like, I don't think that's happening this year. Maybe in the future it will. But essentially, some big coolers and lots of ice. And then, like, the ability to, like, handle and process these things in a timely manner. Because, like, flies is an issue and the heat is an issue. So me and Nick had a really good system last year. With how we did it. So, like, I have a little bit more confidence of how to process one. He's got more confidence in me because he's like, hey, I don't have to do it myself. We can do this together. And then also now it's like, hey, you got two guys that kind of know what's going on. It's easier to have the third guy come and lend a helping hand. So I think we're processing them. I'm not too worried about it. Last year it seemed kind of daunting, but no, man, it was no big deal. Gutting them, doing that kind of thing, very similar to a whitetail. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Essentially, we're just going to have some big coolers, a lot of ice, a torch to burn the hair. We keep the hide on. We burn the hair, scrape the hog down, and clean it with water, and then strategically place the chunks of meat into the coolers with lots of ice. And, you know, I have a cover on my truck So we can just, you know, do that, you know, shady spot, all that stuff. And if we end up getting, you know, some that we want to keep maybe early in the hunt, it's just going to be like, hey, let's keep them in a, you know, a shaded area, the coolers, constantly buying ice and do that. And man, it worked. And then Nick's got a giant freezer, so he's able to put the pieces in that and, you know, preserve those and then get them, you know, chilled. He's got like a little cool bot thing. So like, they don't freeze all the way, it chills them. And then once the meat's all good and chilled, like I make a trip out there, then I grab them, transfer them back by me, and then I can, you know, either process them the rest of the way or whatever I want to do and get them, you know, in the freezer and deep freeze or, you know, vacuum seal, all that stuff. So really, really good operation. I'm looking forward to doing that again. It's kind of fun. It's a lot of work, right? But it's enjoyable work. So that's the hog hunt. I'm going to be doing that here in less than a week. Hopefully I have some cool footage from that. And a good story. I'm sure we'll have a hog camp podcast that'll come out. Maybe we might be too busy or too tired chasing them things. Who knows what ends up happening, but that's kind of the hog hunt. All right. Whoo, getting through this. I'm gonna take another drink, make sure we're good to go. I'm gonna wrap this baby up. All right. So the last newest current event is a new bow. So I have bought, I don't know, I think this is gonna be year three on my carbon Hoyt bow. I finally bought a carbon bow, you know, 2 years plus ago. So it's my third season with it. And I love that bow. Like, it's so, it was, there was some benefits to the bow that I didn't realize were as nice as they are. So I freaking love hunting with that bow. It's probably been one of my top two or three favorite bows I've ever had. Shoots great, all that. And I don't have any intentions of not hunting with that bow. But what I did have happen is not necessarily a bad thing. So, okay, so like when I shoot foam, I shoot a different arrow than when I shoot deer. Just because shooting foam, I, you know, wanted a lighter arrow, didn't need to have as crazy of an arrow. I'm shooting farther distances. And the Canadis fit really well for shooting foam. Like, you know, Brian Terry and his brother and all the guys from Zinger and Canadi. Great dudes. He's been on the podcast before, and I love that. I love that combination, right? I love the arrow. I love the Zinger on there and shooting foam. Man, I don't have to worry about wrecking fletchings. I mean, just a really good, solid arrow. They all flew really well. Did my traveling 3D league, shot great with my hunting bow, and was like, dude, this is great. I love it. And then came the time where I was like, I'm going to switch to my heavier, you know, duty. Because like Canadi has their K1 and their M1, so they have two different options. So I was using the K1s for foam. Didn't want to buy any more arrows because I already had a bunch of arrows. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll use those for foam. He's, you know, we got those 4-tack and that kind of stuff. And then I have my day sixes, man. Day six arrows. All I'm going to say is if you look back through my podcast, if I think Arrow Integrity was the title of it, it's over a year ago probably now or somewhere in there. But Arrow Integrity, Brian Broderick with Day 6, man, I've heard him on Kevin's podcast, the Deer Hunter podcast. I think he was just recently on that. So you want to hear an up-to-date, you know, a little closer. I mean, just search Brian Broderick on podcast. He's been on a few. Like, I love his philosophy and how he talks about having an arrow to kill critters, right? Like, and how they operate over at day six. Like, I bought those arrows, I bought a bunch of them years ago, and I still got them because guess what? I've only broke one on a deer, and that was last year. And I shot my buck in Kansas. It was a far shot. He was quartering too slightly, put it in, went through his front shoulder, went through part of his, like, it hit the bone on the opposite side shoulder. There was a cut across the bone. And it was sticking out. And when he took off, he snapped off the arrow. And it did not break anywhere near the insert. It did not break anywhere there. It just broke, like, in the middle. Like, not the middle. So, like, closer to the fletchings, you know, like, 3/4 up. Because it just didn't quite get through it fast enough. And because he instantly took off, snapped it. Only arrow I've ever broke on a deer. I broke one other arrow. I had my sight got messed up 1 year. Shot it at home. Was like 20 yards, skipped it off top of the target, boom, stuck into a door jam because it, you know, did a cream or whatever off top of my target, boom, right into my barn extension jam of the door. And I went down there, I was like, holy cow, arrow wasn't broke, but the thing was buried. And I was a little frustrated, so I like tried to pull it out. It was buried in there. I was like, piss on this, and I just snapped it off. So those are the only two arrows I've ever broke day six, but So for killing deer and doing those things, I love those arrows. That's like my hunting arrow. But it's not a very efficient arrow to shoot 100 yards at tack or to shoot random yardages or try to like do 3D and foam stuff. I mean, you can do it, yes, but for me, I was like, I want a little more flatter shooting, faster shooting arrow. So I think I come right around 550 grains with the day sixes, maybe a little more, and had great success. Love those arrows. Anyways, so the problem I was kind of like, not the problem. So you shoot these lighter arrows all summer, shooting foam, getting ready for tack. And then I switched once the 3D league was done, like that day or the next day, I swapped over to the day sixes. And that's a different sight tape, you know, that's all that stuff. And then you shoot the rest of the summer, all fall, all winter, I was shooting with those arrows, my bow. And it's like, all right, you know, it's getting nice out. I'm going to stretch the arrows out a little bit, getting ready for foam season. You know, I had I got that different sight last year, and I swapped the tapes out because I kept them and started shooting and was like, ugh, like I just didn't like it, right? It was a little off. My bow was maybe a little out of tune, lighter arrow, a little more finicky. And I was like, I'm like looking over my string. And I'm like, I should probably like before I like dive down this huge like tuning rabbit hole to get it right where I want it. I was like, I should just get a new string, right? Took advantage of a sale, bought a set of strings, got that put on the bow. And I'm like tweaking the bow to shoot these foam arrows, right? Like I'm doing my micro tuning, which I don't mind, right? Like I get it. Like you get the bow all set up, you know, shoot it through paper, bare shaft, all that stuff. And the whole time I'm like, man, I'm just dinking around with this. And it's like, I don't even, like I'm not even going to kill something with this arrow. I just want to shoot foam. So I started like thinking about like, okay, and it's such a difference, right? Like when you shoot your one, like when I shoot my hunting arrows, like you get a feel for like how the arrow performs at 20 yards, how the arrow performs at 30 yards, how the arrow performs if you have the sight tape set at 30, but you're shooting 33, or you have your sight tape set at 20 and the deer moves to 27, and like you understand like your drops, right? Your holdovers, that kind of stuff. Well, when you go from shooting an arrow that's, you know, 430 grains to a 550 grain, that's a big difference. And, like, I know a lot of guys go back and forth with, like, what they want to do, like, and how their bow operates, whatever. I shoot 70 pounds, and I have a 30-inch draw, so, like, I can get away with arrow weight really easy, and it's kind of harder to get an arrow to fly good with a lighter arrow. So I was just like going through this, and I kind of was talking to a couple of buddies, and like, yeah, man, I'm kind of like not really enjoying doing this. I almost want like a different, like I just want like a foam bow and a hunting bow. So one of my buddies, he's got a bunch of bows. He's like, dude, I'll sell you a bow. And I was like, all right, cool. Like, what kind of bow is it going down there? And I was like, all right, I think I'm going to do that. Like, I think I'm just going to buy a separate bow and go that route. Well, then he calls me up and he's like, dude, there's a deal on a bow. Like, you should get it. So we actually end up getting new bows. So the new bow that's coming is a Prime RVX 36. And my intentions are to have that be my foam bow, right? And it was a really good deal, you know, found it online and all that stuff. And I'm kind of excited. It's a taller axle bow. I've shot Prime before in the past, so I'm pretty pumped. So I'm going to try this, right? And a lot of guys maybe have experience with this, maybe they don't, but my philosophy's always been one bow to do it all, right? If I'm going to shoot my bow, I'm shooting this bow. So I make kind of a hard transition here and try to do the two bow thing and then just have that set up for foam. And then also like the idea of having a backup bow. I didn't really think much about backup bows until last year in Kansas. I can't remember exactly what I was doing. I think I almost dropped my bow, but I can't remember if I was on the way up the tree, like I was pulling it up, or on the way down. Anyways, it was on a hunt. This is what happened. I did almost drop my bow, but then I also lost my release. My release, I dropped in a creek. Thank goodness I had a backup release. But we tried to go to a place to, like, I'll just find a place to go buy a release. Dude, nothing. Like, there was no one around. All the small local shops that were like within an hour were closed because it's hunting season. It was kind of like, hey, if it's November, you know, 1st through the 16th, like good luck finding me, because like I'm not going to be around. And I was like, man, I didn't really waste hunting time, but like it was a big deal to like go drive out there, find out what's closed, and come back. And then I almost dropped my bow on that same trip, and I was like, what happened if I would have broke the string or smashed this bow, or you know, something crazy happened? I was like, started to think about like, oh, having a backup bow is not a bad idea. So that, with the deal of this bow and foam bow kind of all collided, and I'm going to give it a shot. So I'm excited to have that bow come in, do that. And then, like, my setup wise is going to be, I have an extra sight, I have an extra rest, I have extra stabilizers. So it's kind of like my, I'm going to try to do this on like a budget. You know, the Hoyt carbon bow was excessively expensive, right? Like, that is, at the time, it was one of the most expensive bows. And then, you know, you throw on the Hoyt quiver to match, and then you throw on, you know, like the little bow stand to go with it. I didn't go crazy with stabilizers because I already had a back bar. But, you know, you buy the bracket, the Hoyt bracket for the back bar, you get a new rest for it. I mean, it's expensive, right? Bought a used sight that was expensive. So that bow is kind of like, holy cow, I dropped a bunch of money. Like, that was side job and gun fund money, like saved up kind of like strategically, had a money for that bow. And now this bow is going to be the polar opposite, right? Like, bought an older bow, not the brand new flagship bow, huge discount on it because of circumstances with the archery shop. And then I have stuff laying around. So, like, I'm going to try to set up this bow. And then I think it'll be kind of cool to, like, hey, this is what I did. I bought an older bow. And it got used, pretty much everything is going to be used accessory wise on it. And compare that to, you know, a little bit newer bow, as in, you know, carbon top of the line, whatever. Now there's, you know, RX9s or whatever, but still, like, I spent a bunch of money on this and I didn't spend a bunch of money on that. And I think it's going to be really cool to, like, shoot those and see the difference. And then also, like, for guys like, you know, who are maybe new into archery or want to upgrade their bow because they've been shooting the same bow for 10 years and are looking for things. Like, I've been scouring, like, when I started thinking about wanting a backup bow, I was, like, looking around online. And, dude, there's some really good deals on used bows. Like, if you want to get a fully outfitted bow with arrows and everything and a case even, like, you can find some really solid a few-year-old bows. And I think that's a really good play for someone who's, like, new into archery or wants to upgrade on a budget. And they shoot great. And I think that's going to be kind of me. I'm going to kind of see how this works. And I'll have some really good, you know, talking points. Because I've been telling people that. But I haven't found myself doing that. I just am the guy that buys the brand new bow. Shoots it for, you know, 3 to 5 years. And then buys another brand new bow. So I'm going to do this. See how it works. See how I like having two separate bows. And we'll go from there. So, yeah. Tack is in the works also. Going to be doing that this year. Hopefully do a 3D league of some sort. But there's a lot going on. And it's all good. And I think that's pretty much it. I'm going to check my notes here. Yeah, man, that's what I got. That's all I got here for this week's episode. I mean, holy cow, almost went an hour on this. I knew I had a lot to talk about, just get off my chest, and I didn't know if it was going to be an hour, but it was. So, hey, thank you for listening. If you made it through this whole thing, hear me blabber on. Appreciate it. Look forward to next week's guest. Look forward to getting back in that groove. Hopefully I'll have some good stories about the hog hunt. Burn some lead, bring home some meat. It's going to be a good time. Anyone else who is not knowing what to do, not knowing, like, twiddling your thumbs because you're, like, been stuck inside all winter, just make the small effort to go do something different. Go walk that piece of public land you've never been to. Go throw a line in a river somewhere if you want to try that. Go walk around with a 22 here before March is done, right? Got a couple more days before it's March 31st. Try to shoot a squirrel. Try to shoot a rabbit. Do those kind of things. Heck, you can call for crows, you can call for coyotes. There's so many options, especially if you're in the state of Michigan right now. Ice is coming off all over the place. If it's not off all the way, I mean, fishing's going to be in full swing. Just kind of make those small steps to go put yourself outside more often than you do right now. You will enjoy it. It'll be worth it. You're building the Rolodex for spots. You're building you're slowly building up throughout the summer to go into fall, get ready for hunting season, spread it out throughout the year, right? All right, that's it. Off my soapbox. Thank you guys for listening. Anywhere you're listening to this, please leave a review, ranking. Really appreciate that. Helps with all the numbers, helps with all the downloads, all that stuff. Go check out the page, Michigan Wild Pod at Instagram. Follow that, interact on there. Just look me up, Nate Roosevelt on Facebook, and then also Rome Hunt, right? Rome Hunt on Instagram and Facebook. You can go check that out. There'll be some, that's where all like the video stuff is going to kind of be going, and that kind of thing. Be great. All right, you know what to do. Make sure you guys get out there this week. Enjoy the creation, enjoy being outside. I mean, dude, warm weather is it's gonna get here. It's gonna be nice for like more than a day or two, and a lot can be done. Everything's gonna start greening up, and I'm ready for it. I'm not ready for the allergies, but I'm ready to get outside and not have to wear a hoodie and all these layers. It's gonna be good. All right, signing off. See you guys next week.
This app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.